Hello and welcome to Jaw Law. I'm your host, Joe McGregor from Dallas, Texas, from the law firm of McGregor and Oblad. And today we're going to talk about the 7 unwritten rules of contracts. Before we get started into today's topic, on September 7th, we're going to be having a practice launch seminar for those who are thinking about either starting or buying a practice somewhere in the next 1 to 3 years. That's going to be here in Dallas, Texas, September 7th. It's going to start at 9, end about 1 or 2. If you want to register for that, go to this show's website, which is jawlawpodcast.com. And then finally, if you have any questions that you have for me or topics that you want us to discuss on the show, my email is jmcgregor@mcgregorfirm.com. Anyway, it's been a year since we've done this podcast thing, and I'm very, very out of practice. So this is probably not the last mistake I'm going to make. But now let's get on to the show. So the title of this episode is The 7 Unwritten Rules of Contract Law. Now, whenever anything is unwritten, and it is obviously kind of made up, right? Because if we wrote them, then we'd have the 7 written rules, and there's a lot more than 7. But for our purposes, these are things that I have gathered from my observation. And specifically, my observation in the dental industry. These are things that I wish I could tell people before they got into a contract. Things that they should know, and I mean that in that I want them to know. They shouldn't know because they've had no other opportunity to learn how contracts work. And so the point of today's episode, these are the 7 concepts that you need to know about contracts so that you don't make the same mistake that other people are making. And by the way, none of these are at the top of my head because they happen so often. So if you have a situation that is similar to something I'm about to describe, don't think I'm picking on you or anything like that. These are things that happen so frequently that my memory about specifics, like specific clients and stuff, that gets washed away because it just happens so frequently. So number 1, don't do business with someone you need a contract. Now, the other side of this is never do business with anyone without a contract, and I firmly believe that. I think that that's true even if you're going into, like let's say you're going to start a practice with your best friend. I've seen that go sour fast and frequently. Always use a contract. But at the same time, this whole point is don't go into business or don't get a contract with someone you think you absolutely need a contract. So many times people come to me and they're like, Joe, I want to get a contract because I'm not so sure about this guy. It is so hard just to maintain a good relationship, even without contracts, that if you're going into a relationship needing the guardrails that a contract offers, then I would suggest that you should rethink who you're going into business with, who you're going to work for, who you're going to work with. Whatever the contract is, you need to really think about this. If you're talking about, hey, I really need a contract with this contractor because I've heard some stuff, man, that just means don't go and hire that contractor. Go to someone else where you haven't heard those things. Same thing with employers or with a broker. If you're going to sign a contract with a broker and you've heard this broker does certain things and you want to protect yourself, you need to rethink those relationships first before you get to a contract. Should you have a contract? Absolutely. I believe every relationship needs a contract, but it should be someone that you don't think you need a contract with, and then you get contracts so that you provide that lowest common denominator, some guardrails to your relationship just in case you get some friction on a topic you haven't discussed yet. All right, number two, don't plan to break a contract. So here's what happens. Someone sees something in a contract and they assume it's unenforceable. And by the way, it's rarely a lawyer who's telling them that it's unenforceable. It's their classmates. It's someone on a dental form. It's not a lawyer who's saying this is unenforceable. Somebody just, they get the contract. And a lot of times this is like notice provisions, restrictive covenants, things like that. And they're like, oh, that's not enforceable. I'm going to just sign this contract. And when the time comes, I will just do whatever I want. The problem is that's not how contracts work. And we're going to talk a little bit about this in a separate one of these other unwritten rules. But the idea that it's unenforceable is imaginary. It is your hope that it's unenforceable. But you don't just tell an employer, hey, guess what? Your contract that I signed 2 years ago that had this 50-mile restrictive covenant, that's unenforceable, so I'm not going to honor it. That's just something you say. A judge is the one who says, this is unenforceable. And so when your colleagues or whatever, they're telling you, hey, something's unenforceable, what they're really saying, you know, interpreting that as best we can, they are telling you that is probably unenforceable if it went to a court. They don't know. They've never been involved. But the point I want to make is that you shouldn't sign a contract with the expectation that later on you're going to just write an email to your employer and say, guess what? I'm not going to honor this contract because it was unenforceable when I signed it. If you're that certain that it's unenforceable, you need to go into the contract and have a conversation with your employer. And if your employer is not reasonable enough to have that conversation, then again, maybe that's not the employer you want to work with. Number three, don't plan to enforce a contract. When you're creating a contract, obviously the point is that you have something that's enforceable. That's a lawyer's job, is to write an enforceable contract. That's not what I'm saying. And I'm not saying, certainly not saying, don't have a contract. What I mean is that when you are relying on using a contract as a whip to force certain behavior, that's not the most efficient way to do this. Again, go back to who you're working with. Make sure that this is a person that you can do business with, that you want to do business, and that you expect them to honor the contract. But secondly, a step further is make sure the incentives make sense and are aligned. Then you go to the contract. There are rarely things that are that make business sense and economic sense that you want to go to war over in your contract. Now, there are things, so yes, your contract needs to be enforceable. But again, if that's your plan going into it, there's work to do. There are things you need to talk about, things you need to negotiate before you sign that contract. Number four, don't Frankenstein. Now, Frankensteining is when, let's say you own a practice and you want to hire your first associate. And you worked at two places before you owned your own practice. And you liked some things from this contract and some things from that contract. Frankensteining is marrying the two together. Like, I'm going to take the restrictive covenant from that one, but the compensation from that one. The problem is that you have certain contract principles, the actual written rules of contracts that govern how to interpret your contract. And each of those two or three contracts that you're pulling from, they were written under the written rules of contracts. The authors expected that they would be interpreted a certain way, and they're using language from a certain expectation. And furthermore, might have even been different states. They might be written for different sizes of employers. So for instance, here in Texas, and this is common in a lot of states, so applies to almost everyone. There are rules that apply. If you've got like five staffers, there are a different set of rules that apply if you have 50 staffers. The point is, you don't want to necessarily mix and match. Now, lawyers do this. They do it all the time. But they know how to mix and match. They know how to merge the stranded provision in some contract and bring it into a different contract and form them up. Now, imagine this. Somebody calls me up and they say, Joe, I am having trouble interpreting this contract. I'm having problems with my employer. Can you take a look at this? And I look at it. And sure enough, I hate to put a percentage on it, but most of the times when there are problems, and especially when I think those problems favor the associate, it's because you can tell, you can look at that contract, and you can see that the author used two different contracts, and it left something undefined. So to the owner, they thought, because it's in their head, they're thinking, oh yeah, I meant to say this. Well, that's not what your contract says. You're using one set of language in this part of the contract, but then when you got to this portion, you didn't use that, and you left it undefined, and you messed up. I see this a lot when someone will merge an independent contractor agreement and an employment agreement, and you accidentally leave things that shouldn't be there, and it causes problems. If I had to say, what's the biggest problem from practice owners hiring an associate, it is those practice owners who Frankenstein an agreement. There are other problems, and we're about to talk about some more, but the Frankensteining is the biggest problem because they create their own problems, right? They have things in their head, and they think it gets to the paper, but it doesn't, and then someone has to let them know, and it just rarely works out in their favor. One thing you do, one of the written rules of contract law, is that ambiguity favors the non-drafting party. So if you're a practice owner and you Frankenstein two contracts and there's some ambiguity, guess what? The court will interpret that ambiguity in favor of your associate. And that's not what you want. You don't want to be there unless you went to law school and you know how to draft not even all lawyers are good at it. Unless you know how to conform these provisions, Frankensteining is a bad idea. So now that we have beat that dead horse, moving on to the cousin of that idea, don't download contracts. Now, here's a dirty little secret. Lawyers download contracts all the time. They go to Google. So somebody wants to do something like let's just say there's a lawyer, your cousin Eddie is going to help you out, and cousin Eddie has never drafted an employment agreement before for a dentist, maybe never, period. And you're like, but I'd still like your help, cousin Eddie. And what are they going to do? Probably not going to sit there with a blank sheet with Microsoft Word and just start drafting a contract. What they're going to do is they're going to go to Google. And there's some other repositories of template documents and stuff. But honestly, they're going to hit Google. Maybe even we're starting to see some ChatGPT. They're going to go there and they're going to try to get a template. So what's the difference between that attorney doing it, cousin Eddie, who has no experience, and a dentist going to it? The difference is, and honestly, sometimes there's not a huge difference, but the difference I see is that at least the attorney, cousin Eddie, he has some training in how to polish up that contract. He might be in Texas and find a contract from Alabama, and he is trained enough to know, hey, let me look at the differences between Alabama law and Texas law so I can at least fix those sections. They will hopefully know some things about contract law, that's not going to be enforceable here in Texas. And they just have a better place to use that template as a starting place than you do if you've never written one of these contracts before and you don't know, like I said, the official rules of contract law. If you don't know these, then you're just pulling some contract from California that's going to place more burden on you than you need. And, you're going to have a contract that probably isn't appropriate for your situation. I want to be clear. I don't actually have a problem with people finding these documents. Even if you are the one who goes out to the internet and you find a contract that you like, I still suggest sending it to your lawyer and having, like, maybe that's what you want your lawyer to use as a starter. I just had a deal where, and without giving too many details, I was representing a client, and the other side was like, hey, we're drafting this contract, and it'll be drafted very soon. And we were we were kind of waiting for a minute, and we're like, what's going on? Why is it taking so long? And the other party was like, yeah, the lawyer's just putting a lot of effort into it, basically. And I'm like, okay, all right. Well, guess what? And they sent it over, is my contract. He must have found that from a different deal, probably multiple, like at least once a month. Sometimes like multiple times a month, we see like other people present us our contract. Some employer found our contract and is presenting it to an associate who we represent, or sellers or buyers, things like that. It happens all the time. I don't get annoyed. I don't get offended. I probably like quietly get annoyed if an attorney acts like, in that case, acts like they drafted it, because he didn't. But for the most part, like, I just don't actually care. As long as you are doing what you need to do to make that contract yours, that's the important thing. So I say don't download, but what I really mean is make sure you have the skill to make the contract yours and to make it appropriate for you. All right, number six is kind of a tough one to explain. I say don't get cute, and this covers a lot of stuff. I recently had a contract where the practice owner did not, like boasted to, like, didn't need an attorney, but tried the whole contract to sound like an attorney. And, you know, as is wont to happen, twisted his own words up to where, you know, I'm sitting here like, that doesn't say what you think it says, you know. And I, I have to be strategic about how I share and how I change these things. But all I know is that that guy, he's sitting there behind his desk thinking he just wrote an amazing contract, when in reality, if that ever goes to court, which again, we don't want it to, but if it ever goes to court, he is going to be very disappointed. And all because he was trying to get cute. If he just would have used plain English, wouldn't have had the problem. But that's not what he did. What's funny is that people talk about legalese all the time, and lawyers just can't say things straight. That is true. That happens a lot. But there is a movement in law to try to write more plainly, to try to be more straightforward. And I would say most of the contracts that I encounter, when they can be straightforward, they are straightforward. There are provisions that have a lot of legalese, but there's a reason. It's because decades and decades, sometimes centuries, but mostly decades on decades of courts expecting certain things to read a certain way. The only time as a contracts lawyer that you're okay with a somewhat stuffy provision is because you're not writing it for the parties, you're writing it for the judge, and you're going to have to explain to the parties what this means. It's actually not that common anymore, but it does happen. You, as a dentist, shouldn't like interpret that as, oh, I should sound like that. You should not. Always favor the plain language when you're writing something, favor it. Another thing that comes up in this category, people like to boast about how short their contracts are. Like, oh, I didn't need 10 pages. I just wrote it on a single piece of paper. That's not as good as you think it is. What that means is that you left a lot of important things out. And yes, that does come back to bite people. There's a reason, like lawyers get paid by the hour, but they don't get paid by the word. Like, they don't necessarily have a strong incentive to keep writing provisions. They're in there for something, right? There's a reason that they're in there. And do you, as a dentist, or I mean, whoever's listening to this, do you have the skill set? And maybe you do. I'm not saying you don't. But do you have the skill set to know whether or not that provision should be taken out of the contract or not? And my guess is that a lot of people don't. Because even I, as an experienced lawyer, sometimes I will really fight internally with whether or not to include a certain provision. And if you're coming in there and you're just like, hey, we don't need all that crap, well, maybe you do. You just don't know it yet. And when will you know it? When it's too late. My last and final unwritten rule of contracts law is sign your contract on purpose. This is a hard one to explain because I guess I probably need to explain it in terms of what gets presented to me, what happens. And I would say this is a minimum of once a month, probably closer to once a week, or like three times a month, something like that. Anyway, somebody calls me up and says, Joe, I heard you look at dental contracts, specifically employment contracts. I have a job offer that is like the job of my dreams, and they need me now. They said they're willing to wait 2 weeks, but my contract says I have to give 90 days notice, my contract from where I was working. Will you, Joe, take a look at my contract and see if there's any way I can break this thing? So with this scenario, the number one thing you need to know is how contracts work. You need to know that in contract law, the chances that in otherwise, like you looked at that contract a year ago or 2 years ago, and you didn't think that there was a problem with it. But now you want to know if there's some nook or cranny of this contract that has some fatal weakness, some Death Star weakness that you can just forget the whole thing and your employer can do nothing about it. That's not how this works. Can that happen? Sure. And that's why we basically always say, yeah, send us your contract, because it can theoretically happen. But the instances where that's where we're looking at the contract and we're like, you know what? You're right. You have a get out of jail free card, and this is how this is going to work. That's pretty rare. Like probably close to 99% of the times, it's just your choice to break that contract. It's not on its surface illegal or unenforceable. And again, this goes back to something we talked about earlier, but that's not how it works because again, it's not unenforceable until a judge says it's unenforceable. So what you're asking me is there something so outrageous that they would have to look at it and say, oh yeah, crap, we forgot that. Go ahead, move on. That's just not gonna happen. Does it happen? Yes, it does, but it's super rare. And I love to be the hero. I will tell you, I've had a couple of those situations where I'm like, oh my gosh, they forgot to do X. You can do whatever you want. And I look like a hero. They name their child after me. I am amazing in their eyes. I love it. I love to be that person. But it's just probably not going to happen for you. So when you sign your contract, don't just sign it. Sign it on purpose. Understand the contract. Obviously, as an attorney, I'm encouraging you to go to a contracts lawyer. I'm not even saying you have to hire us. Just go to somebody who can interpret that contract for you to help you understand these provisions, to help you understand what's likely to be enforced and what's likely to not be enforced, so that when you're going through this relationship, you understand what you can and cannot do. And when the time comes to an end, you understand exactly how to get out of that contract. And by the way, in the event something is happening in your relationship, it behooves you to raise those issues in real time, to bring that up. Because if you don't, then it's just going to look like you're trying to get out of a contract, which actually you are. But that concludes my 7 unwritten rules of contracts. There are way more than that, right? Like there's a lot, but these are the ones where I wish everyone understood these things so that we got fewer phone calls of people desperately trying to get out of a contract or people signing a contract under these false ideas that something was going to be unenforceable. Because these are the calls that I get that means I'm going to have to disappoint someone. And I don't like to disappoint people. And that's all for our episode today. Thanks for spending this time with us. We hope that it helps you. And if it helps you, we hope that you will take just a few seconds to rate and review our show. That helps other people find this, helps with the algorithms. And if you really like it, we would ask that you do something to help someone else know that this thing exists. So again, thank you so much, and we will see you next time.